Welcome to the Beyond Jiu-Jitsu podcast. This is episode 162. My name is Kieran Lefebvre, and I'm joined by the one, the only, Adam Childs. I haven't done that one in a while.
It's been a while. Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Kieran, what is up, my man? It's very hot here. How is the weather there?
Fucking freezing, dude. It's been like average of -8 degrees. It's snowing outside right now. Wind's blowing. I had to dig my car out, literally dig it out because it was like just the tires were just spinning in the snow yesterday, actually. Yeah, it's bullshit, man.
I don't know if you how much domestic Australian news you get or access or read while you're over there, but it was, yeah, zero. So Saturday, I think it was here in Sydney, it was the hottest day in the last 4 years.
How hot was it?
I think it was 44 or something.
44 degrees. Holy shit.
It was pretty hot. It wasn't 44 where I live. I think it was like the news said it was 40 in the city, maybe 41 in the city, and then 44 a bit further out west. But
damn.
Luckily for me, I went south. I happened to be going south on that day, so it wasn't as bad south. It wasn't too bad. Mm. And my house has air conditioning, so it's all right. But yeah, I prefer. Do you prefer the cold or the heat?
The heat, bro.
No, I prefer the cold.
No, not this fucking cold. You don't trust me, dude. Like it was so cold that your like fucking nose hairs start to freeze. That's how cold it is. Like, I'm not kidding. Like you go outside, it's like -20 outside. It's ridiculous. Like no, you don't. I thought that it was going to be fine, but it sucks, man. It sucks. It's not fun. Like it's fun for like the first time when you're digging your car out literally with like a brush out of the snow the first time or whatever. It's like, oh, this is cool. But then when it happens like the 10th time, you're like, oh, fuck, this sucks. And then like the roads are super dangerous. I don't have the right tires on. I'm sliding everywhere and fucking, ah.
Yeah. I think actually now that I think about it, maybe my opinion has changed a little bit because I used to always have the argument that, you know, yeah, but when it's cold, you can always kind of do something to get warmer, but when it's hot, you're kind of fucked. And I think that kind of goes back to, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, whatever, where it wasn't as common in Australia to have air conditioning, you know, like it was super expensive to have air conditioning. And actually, my parents still don't have air conditioning now that I think about it. But, you know, if it was super hot, you had a fan, your ceiling fan that you could turn on, and that was about all you could do.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, actually, especially in Sydney, most places have air conditioning, you know, so maybe, I don't know, maybe -20 is worse. But 40 degrees is also super shit.
Yeah, they're both pretty shit, to be honest. Like anything above 40 is pretty a bit too hot, and anything below zero for me is, well, fuck, anything below like 10 degrees for me is a bit too cold, but shit, it's pretty cold. Anyway, we have some results to discuss for the official poll endorsed by IBJJF on my YouTube community tab. If you didn't listen to the last episode, we spoke about rules and what rules would change and in IBJJF and in jiu-jitsu in general. And something that kept coming up throughout the conversation was heel hooks in gi. So we decided to sanction an official poll or a survey or a petition, if you will, to change the rules. And the poll was, should heel hooks be legal in the gi? And we had 400 votes.
Did you actually?
Yeah, very good cross-section of the jiu-jitsu community. We had a few comments as well. You know, mixed opinions. But let me put it to you, without cheating, Adam, hopefully you haven't seen it. What do you think the results were?
Probably like 70%+ of people saying that it should be allowed in the gi.
61% voted yes. And yeah, right. 39% voted no.
Lower than I thought it would be. But, you know, I'd be interested to see what some of the comments were. But remember how you were saying that, you know, you'd be curious to see what the belt rank is of the people voting. Not because lower belts don't matter, but you made the point that perhaps people who haven't yet experienced competing with those submissions being allowed or whatnot, you know, their opinion might not be as valuable or
Look, I wouldn't say as valuable, but I get exactly what you're saying. Interestingly enough, one of the more in-depth responses we had a little back and forth here was from someone who I believe is a higher belt, if not a black belt. And they basically said no. And the reason that they believe that it shouldn't be allowed is pretty much what we said during the episode. But keep in mind that the episode hadn't published before this person posted their comment. We don't know if they listened to the episode or not afterwards, but they posted their comment before our episode went live. And they said that the ability to slip the heel and free the knee line becomes a lot harder when both people are wearing the gi because of that friction. And that's exactly what we spoke about. And that would make it more difficult to escape, thus potentially increasing your risk of injury. And even when you're if you're able to escape, your success rate is a lot lower. And then I asked him about, if he wonders that it would just level up jiu-jitsu in general or things like that. And then we had a little bit of a back and forth. But his counter argument to that was that we may see that there are a lot more double guard pulls, which we hate in general, which is his point. Like, people already hate the double guard pull game. And if leg locks were legalized in the gi, we'd see more of that. The matches may become a lot more slower. So it may be moving in the wrong direction to what we want. But my counter to that, which I haven't actually officially posted this as a comment, but my counter to that argument would be like, then we have to be careful because what do we actually want out of jiu-jitsu? Do we want to end up like judo and like game the sport completely around what is most entertaining, hence their banning of touching the lower body? Or do we want the most pure form of jiu-jitsu? And maybe it would be some matches will be less entertaining, but I don't know if I buy that.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hard. Like we said in that last episode that, at the end of the day, it is you do want it to be entertaining, and any rule changes, you got to ask yourself, is it still keeping within the integrity of the sport and adding value to the sport? So, I mean, it's been a while since I've brought up a Formula One analogy, but I didn't mention this last week, but, let's say, so you said, are we wanting it to be entertaining or the purest form?
Yeah.
And we could kind of make the same analogy with Formula One. It's like, well, do we want it to be entertaining or do we want to just have the fastest car that goes around a track? And it's the former, right? So there's lots of rules. The rules every sort of 5 years or so change in Formula One because, they restrict. You can't just do whatever you want to a Formula One car and create, in little air quotes, the fastest car. They have rules in terms of how much it can weigh and, how much body parts can flex and all this sort of stuff because they're trying to create a sport that's entertaining and competitive and, closing the gap between the big budget teams and the lower budget teams and, making sure that overtaking actually happens rather than it just being like, oh, the race is over by turn one because aerodynamics or, So
I would counter it though. In your analogy, I would say the better way to align that is why we have weight classes, to make things more competitive, to make things more fair and equal. I don't necessarily believe that introducing leg locks in the gi would skew the competitive advantage, if that makes sense.
No. But I don't mean like that. I just mean in the sense that like Formula One restricts what you're allowed to do with the car to keep it more entertaining, right? Like they don't just go like, for example, you probably don't know this, but there used to be a Formula One car that had 6 wheels, right? And they changed the rule. And it was actually one of the faster cars. I don't think it won a championship. I can't recall how many.
Where were the extra 2 wheels?
At the front. So it had extra, it had better traction around corners because it had more surface area to steer so around cool. corners, you know, that's like, so cool. And yeah, so, they restrict what you're allowed to do with the car for the sake of keeping the sport competitive, hence entertaining. And similarly,
yeah, it does too. That's sick.
So similarly in jiu-jitsu, right? Like, you know, it's what you're allowed to do with the gi and whatever to keep it entertaining and competitive. But, you know, not to turn this whole episode into repeating what we did last episode.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, but on the flip side, we don't want it to turn into judo. So anyway, IBJJF, the poll has spoken. So
let's send the results to IBJJF and we'll get it sorted for everyone. So thank you for shaping the future of the sport.
Yeah. All right. Onwards and upwards. Today we're going to talk a little bit about kind of essentially different coaching styles, methods, whether you have a coach, want a coach, are a coach. You know, some people kind of have that really militant way of teaching, whether it is jiu-jitsu or it could be a personal trainer or whatever, whereas other people are a little bit more laid back. So we're kind of quite casually just going to talk about that today because I've personally come from maybe a bit more of a militant gym, but it's definitely not the way that I run my gym. Yet weirdly, that militant style is what I react to the best. Kieran, on the other hand, you know, most of his training's been with me, so he's never really done a huge amount of time with a militant jiu-jitsu gym, but perhaps visited some, but actually does come from the military, so is very aware of what it's like to interact with essentially a drill sergeant. And I'm sure some people listening have trained or done PTs or done a CrossFit class or whatever with someone who runs it like they're a drill sergeant.
Yeah.
So I mentioned that I quite like that style of coaching for me. What about for you? Do you prefer someone who's a little bit more, you know, you maggot, Kieran, you fucking suck. What do you like? A little bit more encouragement? Because you definitely have been in the military. Like, how do you feel about that style of
Yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned that I've been in the military and everything. I was in the Navy, for those that aren't familiar, the Australian Navy. I actually spent a lot of time being an instructor. I spent years. So the last couple years in the Navy was teaching. I taught basic navigation to trainees, officer of the watch trainees, people that drive the ships. So that's what I taught. And we did a lot of training and a lot of development in how to actually instruct. And unlike what people think that it is, people think, oh, you hear military, you think that, you know, drill instructors in your face. For the Navy, particularly for officers, that's not the case. Yes, there is a lot of structure. There's a lot of like taking direction, taking orders. And I've delivered many, many orders throughout my career, very like direct, depending on the situation. But it's not, you know, people aren't in your face screaming or anything like that. Again, this is coming from my perspective as an officer type in the Navy. So yeah, I can't speak for different branches. It's very, very different. And that's not how I taught the trainees at all, like giving them very militant, what you would think of militant orders and directions. We actually took it to, I don't know how true this air quote science is, but during my time there, it was during a... this interesting phase of development. Anyway, I'll get to the point. We actually had personality tests. We had to do these personality and learning tests on how we best responded to direction, how we learnt, and then we got a different color-coded profile, and those four main profiles based on the results. And so did all of our trainees. And mind you, there's hundreds of them. And they all would carry around on their assessment books a color-coded page, so we knew exactly what profile they were, so we could try and adapt our teaching style to their personality and how they responded. And keep in mind, this isn't for all the Navy. This is for my particular branch because there's a lot of money that gets injected into it. It's a lot of, you know, high pressure, high stakes sort of environment. So our training was like 3 years long. Anyway, and I don't know if it worked or not, but I don't know. Maybe it was a placebo, but it kind of did a little bit. And what you're describing is what the profile that we called like direct, and it was the color was red appropriately. And those people responded well to just tell them exactly what they did wrong, tell them exactly how to get better, right? Then we had other profiles and other people that wanted a more softer approach, wanted more like they thrived on compliments, they thrived on encouragement, right? And yeah, I don't know, man.
What do you think of if we bring it back to then, rather than just teaching as a whole, if we're talking about it being a bit more restricted to exercise, I guess, right? Rather than just teaching. I mean, what is your opinion of, you know, things that I don't imagine you've done, because I don't believe it exists in the Australian military, and I definitely haven't done, but things like the infamous like Hell Week, you know?
Oh,
that,
it does. It exists.
And so what do you think about that sort of training? For those who don't know, Hell Week is, I mean, comes up in every, you know, every second David Goggins reel or something you see, but you know, it's
who's
essentially
gonna carry the boats, Adam. Who's
yeah,
carry
that's the right. boats. It's what I like I believe the American Hell Week, the one that you get the most, that's online the most, is 7 days, 10 days of essentially sleep deprivation, going into the freezing cold ocean, and you know, just essentially torture for 10 days or whatever it is what it appears to look like.
Navy SEALs, like heaps of special forces around the world, have their some form of Hell Week or a variation thereof. In the Australian military, in the Army, for the SAS and Commandos, they have their variation of that. The in the Navy, we have clearance divers. They're not special forces, but they're like what in our context, our elite unit, if you will, and they have a form of it, but it's only it's a week lead up to our Hell Week is condensed into like 3 days, but it changes all the fucking time, depending on who's, you know, in command, at the chief of Navy level or whatever. But so I don't know what the status is of it now. And yeah, I think it's very appropriate. That sort of, you know, initiation testing period is very appropriate for the role that they're trying to get into. If you're trying to be a Navy SEAL, if you're trying to be an SAS soldier, then yeah, you got to pass the gauntlet. That's a part of it, because it tests so much more than just your physical. It's not really a physical test at all. It's a mental test. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's very appropriate. Very different to what we're talking about though in this episode. I think it's very different to how those people would respond best to a coaching style, because Hell Week is not about coaching. It's not about developing you as a person. It's about testing to see if you got what it takes to then go on to do the training.
Yeah, for sure. But have you ever trained with someone who, you know, for that hour that they're with you of a class or a workout or whatever, they run that hour as if it's Hell Week, like they just don't give a shit about you for that hour?
Yeah, so it's funny.
Because obviously they don't have you for that. They only have you for an hour. So very, like you said, very different to this whole, you know, this is 7 to 10 days of essentially trying to mentally break you. Grenades are going off near you. We're simulating war and whatever. Yeah. So very different, right? But I mean, there's people who run their classes or whatever it is where for that 1 hour, that, like they almost don't care about you at all, and they'll just treat you like absolute shit for that hour.
We had some PTI, so PTI, a physical training instructor. They, when I said that we didn't have drill instructors and everything, we didn't have people yelling at us, PTI is a bit different because they're all trained at the same place. They're all trained together, and they do a lot of tri-service training. So all three services sort of training together, and they are fairly unified across the three branches. So our PTs are, you know, they're very like, everything's militant when they're running a fitness session. So when we do fitness sessions with them, everything's, you know, everything's like push up position, ready, down, up, one, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I have had many, many sessions like that, but they're fine, man. You just fucking do it. You just go along, you do the thing, you know, listen to the direction, and then they're never hard. Like I was never in the fucking army or anything that, you know, I never did like really hard PT in the Navy. So I don't know.
So what about for if going back to jiu-jitsu then, what do you think you personally respond to the best? Because obviously it's a bit more, right? Like if you were randomly visiting a gym, probably you along with everyone else who trains jiu-jitsu wouldn't really care if you were just doing a drop-in how it's run, in the sense that, like, you wouldn't walk out being like, oh, that was a drill sergeant class, like, fuck that, like, that's, you know, because you're just visiting, you don't really care. But when you're talking about the main gym that you train at, it's more, right, because you're there all the time, and obviously there's, it's not just a physical activity, there's all the mental side of it, and the camaraderie, and the, you know, the teamwork and the bonding, there's all this other stuff that, you know, if you then took the wrong person and gave them some sort of condescending comment or whatnot, that could ruin everything for them.
Yeah.
But for other definitely. People, not so much. And I'll mention why. But for you, what do you think you respond to the best?
I love, in terms of environment, I love the environment that you've created. And it's like, I like there to be like a relaxed sort of environment, but I also like, you know, people to train hard. So it's kind of like a little bit of both worlds. I don't really like the environments where it is militant. Like if you go to or very rigid and structured and everything's like by the book, you know, you got to bow into the mats and yada, yada. Kind of like what Gracie Baja is. And I can speak with a little bit of authority because I have trained at Gracie Baja gyms before. And it's very much like everything's by the book. You know, you do everything by the letter, you bow on, we form the line, we do the exact same warm up every time. Everyone counts their push-ups together, everyone counts their sit-ups together, that sort of stuff. I'm not really the biggest fan of that style of, you know, whatever. I like things to be a little bit more relaxed. I think I learn better in that environment, in terms of, like, you know, you don't have to sit in a specific order, you know, fucking, you know what I mean? Like sort of like your environment where what you've created, where it's more relaxed. But at the same time, I also like that, you know, this is going to probably hopefully not come across wrong, but I sort of like that bro culture a little bit as well, where it's, you know, we're fucking training hard and shit, you know, not the boys club, because that has a negative connotation where it's like, you know, a bit exclusionary. I don't, you know, not supporting that, but I kind of like that culture where it's a bit like, you know, we train hard, it's fucking a bit gritty, you know. I like a bit of both, but I don't think you to have like that, you know, bro culture, you need to for it to be militant either. I don't know. That's the coaching I respond to. Now, as a coach though, I need to be very careful, because when I'm receiving feedback, for example, I really like to be told, you know, what I did wrong and what I need to do to fix it. I don't necessarily need lots of encouragement. Like encouragement every now and then, I'll be told I did a good job. Everyone likes that. But it's not necessary for me to receive, depending on the situation, of course. So that's how I deliver my direction, critique, and instruction. And I've done that for a very long time. And for some people, it's very disheartening. I literally had one of my trainees in the Navy said to me once, like, sir, you've never given anyone a compliment, like, or never told us we've done a good job. And it kind of, I still remember that to this day, because it kind of hit me. I'm like, fuck, he's kind of right. I haven't, even though they have done a good job, because it's kind of like, I assume that if I don't correct them, then they would know that they're doing a good job because I haven't given them a correction. but that's not the way people work. So I'm very careful when I'm giving feedback to students, trainees, or clients, or whatever, to try and structure in a way that I draw out the positives and bring emphasis onto what they're doing well, and then give encouragement on improvements, rather than just be like, hey, like, fix this sort of thing. You get what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's the ability as an instructor to read, to be able to coach a student without them carrying around a color-coded piece of paper, which, you know, don't get me wrong, that would help a lot, I guess, but probably not super practical in jiu-jitsu. And it's one of
very expensive.
Yeah. It's one of the things that I always credit my coach Fabio was so good at doing, was really being able to tell how, you know, how to teach each student. And for, but you know, the longer time passes since I've spent time with him, I do wonder if maybe it was a little bit more just half-half. And what I mean by that is, did he teach all the competitors the same way and then all the non-competitors the same way? I'm just having this realization now as we're having the conversation. I'm not sure, but he was definitely really hard on the competitors. And I respond to that. And I think he also, he creates, I don't know how he does it, but Fabio just kind of has this aura of authority and this aura of, you know, oh, I want to please this person, right? Like, this is the big head honcho or whatnot. And yeah, he was really, really hard on the competitors. And I personally responded quite well to that, that sort of, that, that coaching that essentially constantly, it's actually not healthy when I think about it, but that sort of coaching style that is essentially constantly making you feel like you're a bit piece of shit, but you're just trying to, you just keep trying it. You're so stubborn. You keep trying to prove that you're not a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, and every now and again, you would get that good compliment. Like I remember one time I was, I think I was a blue belt at the time, maybe. And I was rolling with this purple belt who would have been, I don't know, like 20 kilos heavier than me, 15, 20 kilos heavier than me. And which I know a lot of people train with people heavier than them all the time.
Yeah.
But when you have such a big competition team and a lot of guys preparing for comps, we're quite often, at least at my time at the gym, you're quite often restricted to training with people much closer to your weight because you're always trying to simulate the competition environment. And I was rolling with this guy. It's like, yeah, 15, 20 kilos heavier than me. And I just did this huge overhead sweep on him. Like, was just massive. He flew so far. And I remember just getting that big, like, you know, like, yeah, nice, Adam, from Fabio in the background. And I was like, just fucking do you. And you're like, you know, punching the air. And so I respond to that as well as with any sort of conditioning training as well. But I think it's a little bit different for me with conditioning. Like my colored belt journey through jiu-jitsu was definitely more to do with what I just said, this feeling of trying to prove that I wasn't a piece of shit. And I don't know, maybe that's just part of my personality. I've always, a lot of my humor is poking fun at myself and putting myself down. So maybe that's all sort of interwoven in the way that, you know, my brain works. I'm not really sure. Whereas when it comes to conditioning, it's kind of like I hate it so much. I really, and we've spoken about this whenever it's come up in the 100 plus episodes, I don't particularly enjoy exercising as a whole, really, let alone things that are lactic acid inducing, like strength and conditioning. And so because I don't enjoy it at all, I kind of revel in like the punishment of it. And when someone else makes it even harder, it's kind of what makes me get through it. Like,
yes, yeah, spit on me.
Yeah. Whereas if I get words of encouragement, like that doesn't help me when you're telling me to do that one extra rep of something, or, you know, push for that extra 30 seconds. Come on, you can do it. No, like I respond way better to someone telling me I fucking suck.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're a joke. And in saying that,
just give up. You suck.
Yeah. But in saying that, like sometimes, at least for me, that makes me walk a bit of a line of sometimes like that breaks you, you know? But I had a conversation yesterday, with one of my friends, and we're just talking about running. And for the regular listeners that who we did an episode recently about the importance of asking why and understanding why you do certain things. And I said that I've started to go for a run like once a week but I really don't like it. And I was saying to him, I was like, oh, I just casually said, oh, fuck, I got to go for a run tomorrow morning. I fucking hate running. Just kind of said it like that. He was like, oh, man, do you listen to music when you run? And I said, nah, I don't. He goes, oh, I do. I measure my run by songs. He's like, yeah, the average song is like 4 or 5 minutes. I run for 4 or 5 songs or something, you know, 20 minute run, whatever. And I was like, nah, man. He's like, so what do you do while you run? And I said, I just fucking bathe in how much I hate it. Like, that's I just plod along. I mean, there's no bad intentions there. But for me, it's just like, seems like a waste of time to try mask, like to try to, oh, I'll try to trick myself into liking this because I would be listening to some music. It's like, nah, man, this fucking sucks. I'm just doing it, you know, but that works for me, you know, yeah. Whereas if I tried to find the fun in it, I probably wouldn't do it at all. And I don't know maybe.
Yeah, because if you try to find the fun in it, you wouldn't find shit and you'd be like, oh, fuck this.
Yeah, yeah. Let's call Andrew Huberman and ask why this is. Yeah, but yeah, going back to, yeah, as a coach, so whether Fabio was good at reading that in every individual or whether he did just treat the competitors one way and the non-competitors the other, I'm not sure actually now. But definitely the way he treated the competitors. And in saying this, he got nicer as he got older. And I don't know if that was to do with getting older or just, you know, losing a bit of passion and drive for how aggressive he would coach. I'm not sure. But the way he treated me, and I know the way he treated some other competitors, if you treated just someone who was doing jiu-jitsu as a hobby like that, like this, they would cancel them. They would cancel their membership straight away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was never something I was taught to do, but I kind of naturally, I think, I'm quite good at understanding how certain students need to be coached. So for you in particular, like, it's not even like I had to read it out of you or you verbally told me. It was very easy to see early on that you wanted really direct, you know, specific, you know, whether it's detailed or just like, you know, a concept or whatever, but you wanted very sort of clear, almost bullet points of,
yeah,
you know, of direction. And it was very easy to see that was the best way to coach you. But also I feel like for you, there's also room for like put down, you know, like I feel like as well, there's certain things that the shame and embarrassment of how it happened is the thing that makes you make sure it never happens again. You know, like it's not like, and for anyone listening, sure, hopefully Kieran will back me up. It's not like I've ever been like, guys, look at Kieran. He did this, you know, like not that, but I mean, you know, sometimes maybe I might point something out. I'm like, dude, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, man, like, just, like, come on, like, or something like that, you know? And that clear shock that you might see in me of like, oh, fuck, you know, we'll make sure it then never happens again. So it's not like it needs to be all just this very robotic, like, do this, Kieran, do this, blah, 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 step one, step two, step three, you know, very direct, now go fix it. Whereas I have other students who I know need heaps of compliments and words of encouragement and like, man, you're doing fine. You're being too hard on yourself, whatever. So yeah, definitely have
That's
to.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Adapt to the individual.
Yeah.
And other people are just a complete waste of time.
Yeah, not wrong. Some of the most valuable lessons that I've learned that I still carry to this day, whether I learned them like at white belt from you or whenever, like I still remember some of them where you like after roll or whatever, you've noticed like a trend over the last few weeks. And so we have like a tough roll and then you sit me down like, all right, bro, like you need to sort this out. Like why are you doing this sort of thing? And like sort of, you know, talk me through it. And it's not like it's a little bit of that disappointed dad, and it works very well, very well.
Yeah, like I'll give you another example. I don't want to mention the name at all, not because I'm going to say anything bad, but like there's this one particular thing with a student at the gym that I've mentioned a few times that, and they're a good competitive jiu-jitsu practitioner as well. Not someone pursuing it as a career, but someone that, you know, is very good in the gym. But this thing I've mentioned a few times, like, you need to fix this, and not just say you need to fix it. I'm like, this is how you fix it. It's a very easy thing to do. It's not a complicated thing. But they're still not doing it. With this person, I kind of just have to keep being like, yeah, but I need you to keep working on this. But if we took that exact same position technique or whatever with you, at this point, I would probably be like, dude, like, how many times do I have to fucking tell you? Dude, like, you're still fucking doing it, you spaz, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. I'd say something like that. And yeah. Like, that would work for you, but I wouldn't say that to this other student.
Yeah.
Not because they would necessarily cancel their membership, but I don't feel like it's the best way to teach that person.
And just when you were like mentioning before about how you responded to Fabio, like, it made me think about how I respond to people. Cause like, it's interesting in a jiu-jitsu environment, your coach is not, in my view, correct me if I'm wrong here, but in a way, your training partners can be your coach as well, particularly when they're the upper belts. Like, for example, if you're being advised by a brown belt, they're not an official coach or whatever, but they're helping you along your journey. So how they, I was just reflecting on how other upper belts, how I've responded to their direction or their encouragement or whatever. And there's one individual in particular that, for whatever reason, maybe it's just because I really respect him. So this will be a nice little compliment. But whenever he encourages me when we're rolling or like yells something out to me, I respond to it always, like instantly, like as though you were saying it. And that's Ollie. Whenever Ollie like yells something out to me, like it'll be something like Hulk smash or like Kieran fucking get him or something like that. And I'll just, for whatever reason, like he just, you know, sucks me up.
You'll be pleased or maybe upset to know, but Ollie officially came back to training today. So it's quite funny that you mentioned. Yeah, that's fucking awesome. His first proper class. He did a bit of a tester last week just to drill and whatever, but today he did a full-blown normal class.
Holy shit. So Ollie had hip surgery. So that's he's coming back from surgery.
Yeah, so he had quite a big surgery. Small class, though. I mean, it's December, so like a lot of gyms, it's a bit hit and miss whether it's a busy or not. Mm. So pretty cruisy class, but he still did the normal class. He did, I think, 4 or 5 6-minute rounds, and everyone who was in the class was people he trusted. So there wasn't any, you know, potential really for injury in that regard. Like, he wasn't going to roll with someone who was going to try banana split him or something. But yeah, it's the reason I said it, why you might think it's not good news, is because your knee's all messed up, you know, and wanted to come back to Sydney, beat up Ollie, whatever.
Yeah. I'll still beat him up. Beat him up with one fucking knee. He'll have a shit hip, I'll have a shit knee, it'll fucking bounce out. but that's funny. That's funny.
But that's funny you say that, because I think by default, you respect your coach. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't train at that gym.
Yeah.
And you would go train somewhere else. But you don't necessarily by default respect all the upper belts. Like, obviously, even when I was a white belt, right, and there were purple belts who I could beat in a role, I still respected them for their time on the mat and the fact that, you know, even at white belt, I decided I was going to pursue jiu-jitsu. So even as a white belt, I started to train really career focused, whereas this purple belt might just be a hobbyist or whatever. You know, so they still might technically know a lot more jiu-jitsu than me, just because they might lose to me in a role. Doesn't mean I'm better than them. But even the ones who I kind of didn't get along with, or I thought they didn't know shit about jiu-jitsu or whatever, like, I still respected them. Well, firstly, as a human being, but also just the fact that, okay, they've done their time and someone gave them their belt. I once had someone try to give me back their belt because they felt like they didn't, you know, they had left a different gym. Actually, I've had multiple people do this, and they started training with me and they were already a whatever color belt from a previous gym, and they felt like they didn't meet my standards or the standards in the gym. And that's not to say that my standards are crazy high, or, I mean, I think they're higher than a lot of the local gyms in the area, but, you know, whatever. And yeah, I said, you know, and obviously I think it's pretty obvious that I always refused. You know, I said, no, man, like that's your belt, and you know, you deserve that belt. Someone at some stage deemed you worthy of that belt and they awarded it to you, and you know, it's not for me to take it off you, and you know, like, it's, yeah, that has nothing to do with me. You should wear it proudly, and you know, if you don't feel like you're up to that standard in the gym, like, that's okay, like, we'll work towards it, but you still get to wear that belt. You earned it, you know, like. And it's happened to some people who have just changed gyms, but I've seen it as well from people who have gotten, let's say, their brown belt, but then they quit jiu-jitsu and they come back after 20 years off. And it's like, you know, I get that a little bit more, that they don't feel like a brown belt anymore. And I'm like, yeah, man, I 100% get that. You're essentially like, if I picked up skateboarding again that I haven't done in 20 years, I'll be terrible. You know, like, I can't do what I used to be able to do, but hey man, you, like, you still made it all the way there. You still get to wear that rank, you know, but you just might not be able to perform at that level, but that's okay. I don't know how I got onto this tangent, completely lost how I got there, but anyway, keep your belts, people. Fuck, I don't know. I got so lost.
I've met heaps of people that feel, you know, like a little bit of imposter syndrome the higher they get, because for whatever reason, many different reasons, I've had people, you know, not confide in me as a secret, but just like express that, yeah, they just don't feel like they're or whatever belt, like whether purple, brown, fucking even blue, you know what I mean? So I think it is fairly common. And if you do feel like that, if you sit there and think, maybe I don't deserve my belt, and we've addressed this before on episodes and even questions, I believe, on the Q&A episodes about people maybe not necessarily feeling like they are, you know, at the standard that their belt represents. But what I'd say to that is, if you respect, and you've said this, we've said this before, but if you respect your coach, then you should respect who awarded you the belt. You should respect their decision to give you the belt. You know what I mean? You should respect their opinion of you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's how I got to that point. Yeah, you don't necessarily always respect the higher belt, right? Whereas you typically by default respect your coach, otherwise you wouldn't train there. But yeah, that actually kind of want to seamlessly, I know it's a bit early, but I kind of want to seamlessly segue that into my something interesting, because it's quite a long one that I've got to talk about, which let me paint you a picture. No, so but yeah, I don't know, jiu-jitsu is pretty cool. Like, it can touch a lot of people, and you can meet a lot of people, and it can go places you wouldn't think it would go. And one of my friends that I grew up with, like, I grew up, for anyone who's outside of Australia or hasn't visited, there's a place in Australia called Byron Bay. Typically, if you say you're from Byron, people instantly think of you as like a hippie who smokes weed
and surfs.
And surfs and skateboards and whatever. And that was pretty much what I did throughout most of my teenage years. And so, like, my closest friend through my teen years was this guy that we used to smoke weed every day and like skateboard every day. And it's like, it's all we did when we were teenagers. He was like one or 2 years older than me. I can't remember. So, you know, he had his driver's license and he had this sick pad that was, you know, disconnected from his house. And his parents were pretty chill in the sense that, like, we could just get wasted, like, in his essentially,
like a granny flat.
Yeah, essentially granny flat, or, you know, little garage extension. So he had a driver's license and this whole separate part of the house, and we'd just smoke weed, go skateboarding, play video games, and, you know, it's a bit like every day. You know, and we had jobs as well. Finally, you know, we still also had jobs, but, you know, because I didn't
pay for the weed, bro.
Yeah, that's right. How are we going to pay for the weed? And it's all we did. And then, you know, and then as you get older, like life changes. So, you know, I turned 18 and I, you know, I moved to Sydney and ended up being a bit more sort of like at that stage, just like martial arts as a whole focused. And I stopped smoking weed and, you know, both of us stopped skateboarding, but he was more of a musician and his life went that way. And even though we were best friends for years in our life, you know, friendships grow apart and, you know, we lived in different cities and then I moved overseas and you just like stop talking, right? Anyway, so this is going back like 15, 16 years since we, since I moved away from Byron and we kind of stopped interacting. And then I don't know how long ago it was now. Like, so he's friends with my brother as well, because my brother's a musician. So they're both musicians. They play in a band together, actually. And yeah, like maybe 2 years ago or something like that, he just randomly messages me out of nowhere. I haven't spoken to him for years, really. And he mentions that he started training jiu-jitsu and he's like, hey, you train, man, you train and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And the conversation just started like that. And I was like, yeah, dude, yeah, that's fucking sick. You know, like, anyway, cut to last week. I give a shout out to my boy. I won't mention his name because of the amount of drug implications mentioned in the lead up, but I mean, any of my childhood friends would know who I'm talking about, because, you know, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, my man just got his blue belt last week.
Hey. And,
you know, so I got to give him a shout out. But the reason I wanted to segue it is because that imposter syndrome, prior to the grading, he messaged me and we had a message from a Patreon that was like the exact same message that my mate sent me, essentially saying there's a grading coming up and I think I'm probably going to get my blue belt, because already what a four-stripe white belt and have been for X amount of time and blah, 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 blah. But I don't think I want it because I want to compete more at white belt and I still feel like I've got so much more to grow and this and that. And my response to both my friend as well as the Patreon was that, well, firstly, the exact thing that Kieran said, if you trust your coach, right, you should trust their decision as to whether you should be this belt or not. And the other thing I said, which is the perfect analogy to describe it, because both of these individuals said, oh, I want more experience, like competing at white belt before I go to blue, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, it's not necessarily always that linear and it's not that actual big of a difference. And I said, have you ever played one of those video games where you need to kill monsters or enemies or whatever to gain experience to level up? And sometimes you go out of your way to go to an area of the video game that is more difficult than your character should be able to deal with. Right, but you go there because you get more experience for killing those enemies. You get more bang for your buck. Like, it's a better return on your investment. So you actively go to a harder area to get more experience in return. I was like, sometimes that's also what it's like. Like, sometimes going from white to blue, it's not really a difference at all. You go do a comp and you realize, hey, everyone's just a spaz at blue belt. It's the same shit, right? Or sometimes it's a little bit harder, but like, that return on time investment is going to be way more valuable. So you're going to level up quicker in the process. But yeah, so they both had that imposter syndrome. And even I did. When I went from blue to purple, I was passed over on multiple gradings leading up, like when I'd been a blue belt. And, you know, at that time I was for sure one of the best blue belts in the world. I was definitely the best in the gym and, you know, I was podiumed at Pans in weight and absolute, and all my teammates who were all, you know, previous and current world champions of colored belts and black belts are like, man, you got to go to Worlds, which I didn't go, but they're like, you got to go to Worlds. You're 100% going to win. I would win all the São Paulo circuit competitions, which, you know, São Paulo is like 35 million people. Like, so it's not some small local tournament
in Brazil.
And in Brazil. Yeah. And even when I eventually got my purple belt, I was still like, oh, like, am I really a – oh, I don't know, man. This doesn't – I don't think I deserve this. And so, like, I think I would be at the more extreme end of kind of in that particular anecdote, I'd be more at the extreme end of, man, how is there – there's no room to question that belt. But even I was questioning it. So, of course, someone who's maybe a bit more of a hobbyist or whatever, you might feel some level of imposter syndrome. But 100% trust your coach, right? And, you know, and otherwise find a different gym. But that was my something interesting, just the fact that I got this whole, you know, 25-year arc of a friendship that was, you know, it's not like it ended, right? But life moves on. You fall in and out of contact with people. But then, you know, and now actually I believe from the time this goes up, he'll be a few days away from coming through Sydney. He's going to stop in at my gym, which is actually the second time he'll be stopping by. But the first time he came by, I just had knee surgery, so we didn't get to train. So he'll be coming by. Well, he's got a fresh new blue belt, so he might smash me. He has some extra powers. Yeah, but shout out and congratulations. yeah, that's right. That was my something interesting. Jiu-Jitsu
that
touches
was interesting.
People.
I enjoyed that. Yeah.
That was my story.
Yeah, no, that was really interesting. I enjoyed that. Feel good transformation, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. You said you've got a good one.
I do.
But you said it was relevant.
It is. My something interesting is relevant and good. But I just want to comment on that. I was just thinking about what you said about the whole, like, you know, you get promoted, you don't think you deserve it. I didn't, maybe I'm arrogant. I didn't feel that way when I got my blue belt. I felt like, I was like, yep, sweet, nice. Thank you very much. Like, obviously I appreciate it. But I was like, yep, here we go. This is where I belong. You know what I mean? That's how I felt. And maybe I'm a fucking piece of shit. But then when I signed up for, because I signed up for a competition, like literally like less than 2 months after I got my blue belt. So I competed within the first 2 months. And we've spoken about this before as well. And even, fuck, people at the gym, your gym, have said this to me, like, oh, I just got promoted, so I want to wait a little bit before I compete. I'm like, fuck, bro. Opposite mentality. The best time to compete is at the start of your belt because it doesn't fucking matter. If you lose, who cares? You just got
no
promoted.
No pressure, yeah.
And if you win, fuck yeah. how good is that? Winning early. So the point of the story is I signed up to the comp for that exact reason. I was like, yep, sick. Let's see what it's like. I was a bit nervous, like, oh, fuck, you know, blue belts. But I experienced exactly what you're saying. Like the level difference was almost, I didn't really notice it. And I won my first competition at blue belt, dominated all subs all the way. And, you know, it felt great. And then it's funny when you compete a lot in the same circuit. Like jiu-jitsu in Sydney is popular, but it's not like there's millions and millions of people that train jiu-jitsu. So, and out of those people that do train, like not everyone competes regularly. So you start to see the same faces. You start to see the same people. You follow them on Instagram. You follow their belt progression of people that you know. And it's really funny that the longer you compete for, the more you start to see all of the people that you compete with get promoted. And then it's like a domino effect. It's like one gets promoted, then the other one gets promoted. And then you have like almost reverse imposter syndrome where you look at them and be like, you're not that good. Yeah, you're not a purple belt. What are you doing? The guy that I beat in the first competition at blue belt, he went and did another competition after it and he won that. But it was during COVID. So like traveling was difficult. But anyway, he won that. And then literally after he won it, he got promoted to purple belt. And I saw that, I'm like, hang on a minute. What are you doing up there?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
shit.
Well, yeah, I reckon like, yeah, the thing when you go white to blue, it's just a bigger range that you might encounter. But I think realistically, it's something like this. If I were just to break it up simply, it's probably like 40% of the competitors you come across are going to be dudes who may as well still be white belts.
Yep.
And then maybe 50% of the competitors are going to be like blue belts and, you know, perhaps they're a bit tougher, or they're blue belts who, you know, they don't need to really get much better than they already are, but they're going to get their purple belt shortly because they've been there for a while. And then maybe 10% of the dudes you come across are going to be the guys who are like elite blue belts. Potentially in some gyms, the dude may as well be wearing a brown belt and no one would blink, you know, like you know, 5 to 10% of the dudes you come across are going to be that. But yep. I would say, yeah, like 40% of them are going to be, may as well be white belt, so it won't even feel any different mm-hmm. to your last comp. 50%, maybe you just be like, fuck, that was tough. Like, you know, oh man, I lost, but it was on points, you know, or something. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And then the odd dude who's going to be, fuck, this guy's, yeah.
Like, so, why is this guy wearing a blue belt?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then there was, when I was a white belt, I had a comp where the guy was fucking good, man. He was the best, like, for that skill level, the best I've ever competed up against, if that makes sense, like relative skill. He didn't feel like a white belt. I lost the first one. It's the triangle choke, the guy that choked me out in the triangle. And then I versed him again in Nogi, and we had him more competitive. He won on points, but it was more competitive. But by that stage, you know, we'd done fucking a shitload of divisions, so we're probably both a bit tired. And he got his purple belt recently, like I want to say a couple months ago, maybe. It's fairly recent, maybe 4 months ago. But he was a very senior white belt when I versed him the first time, and I was like a 3-stripe or something, and he'd been a white belt for like 2 years. Anyway, the point is that when, to your point about levels within the game, he's one of those guys that's going to be like that 5% because he won Worlds at blue belt. And then he recently won, he got his purple belt, and then the same month he got his purple belt, he competed at Pants at purple belt and won his weight division and absolute. Like,
oh, he's holy shit.
Yeah, man. He's fucking good. I got to get his name and give his Instagram a shout out, because he also posts really good instructional stuff on Instagram, mostly Nogi, but very fucking good. And he's the type that you're describing there, Adam, where he's like the 5%. He's a career career jiu-jitsu guy. Like, he wants to open a gym. I remember we spoke, you know, about this at length. Like, he's super focused. He trains in the States. He trained at Pedigo Submission Wrestling. He trains a B team. Like, he's all in, and he's fucking good, man. And he's a purple belt, right? But at any other gym, he could easily wear a brown belt, maybe even a black belt at some gyms. Perfect example.
Yeah. All right. I want to hear your relevant something interesting.
Oh, right.
What is
so? It seems like only yesterday that Spotify Wrapped released for 2022, but it's a new year. We have our 2023 Spotify Wrapped. Now, I remember last time on the podcast a year ago that we spoke about this, and I enjoy people's Spotify Wrapped. I don't know why it gets so much hate. There's always, every year, the same memes pop up about, you know, how you think people are going to react to your Spotify Wrapped, and it's like someone going over the top. I enjoy it. I get new music inspiration. I get new podcast ideas from people's Spotify Wrapped. So I enjoy them, but I'm not going to talk about my personal one. I want to talk about our podcast Spotify Wrapped, about everyone listening to this. You are involved in these numbers. You're involved in these data. So we'll play a little game. I have all of our information here. I've gone through our Wrapped. It's private on our Spotify podcaster. So I'm going to ask you, Adam, some questions, and you need to guess which episodes were our most popular, a percentage of how much we've grown, etc. You ready?
Shit. Okay. I was not prepared for this.
Exactly. That's why it was irrelevant, something interesting. Of course you're not prepared. If you're prepared, it's not fun. So no cheating. I want to watch your reflection to make sure you don't open anything on your browser.
Make sure I don't alt tab.
Yeah, alt tab. Fuck it. I'll see the colors. Okay. So the first one is, what was our top episode from 2023? Not necessarily what was posted then, but what was our number one episode in terms of the amount of listens for that year?
Oh, fuck. Man, like, what? I can't even remember. I'd have to go through some of the episode names. Like, Jesus.
Okay, you can pull it up. You can pull it up to have a look, but only on Spotify.
Yeah. Okay, give me 2 seconds. Let me just scroll through some podcast titles from
I'll give you a clue. It was one we released this year as well. So it was published this year.
Oh, is it one to do with ecological learning?
No, it's not the ecological episode. That got a lot of traction on YouTube for all the wrong reasons, but it's not that episode.
Butthurt Gordon Ryan.
I see your strategy here, but no. Do you want me to give it to you?
Give me one more.
All right, one more guess.
One more guess. Jiu-jitsu saved my life but destroyed my body?
No. It was episode 128. Oh, what I learned from John Danaher, very start of the year.
Oh, okay. Yep, that checks out. Well, I wasn't too far off with the sort of, in terms of I went with the you know, the clickbaity titles with, you know, ecological, Gordon Ryan.
Yes, the names. Yep. Well, people will click.
What so I learned that, from John Danaher.
That episode had 622 more percent than our average episode. So it, in terms of our listeners, it was 6.2 times more popular than our average episode. So huge boost for the podcast on that episode.
Heads up, putting the name John Danaher in all our titles.
Beyond John Danaher. yeah. And 70, I'll just give you this one because I can't figure out how to make you guess it. But 72% of our current listeners, people listening to this right now, discovered us in 2023. 72%.
Really?
Yeah, really, really. That's awesome.
And yeah, sick. Thank you, 72%. The rest of you, fuck up. Come back. Poor Nick P's like, oh man.
Oh shit. Okay. And guess, here's one for you. As a percentage, I'll give you like the nearest 2% or whatever. As a percentage, how many of those 72% of our new listeners that discovered us in 2023, how many of them started with their first episode being 128, the John Danaher episode?
Oh. 43%.
Oh, no. That's a bit high. No. 13.
Oh, well, I was going to go higher. Pretty big. I was thinking most people came for John Danaher. 13. Oh, that's
but stayed for the banter. but yeah, so you're one of those people. You're one of the 13%. Now, here's a really good one for you. What is our top country streamed on Spotify or across all? So all this data, it excludes YouTube. I just want to clarify that.
Right. I feel like it's probably not Australia. I don't know. Surely it's not the US.
26% of our total streams come from this country.
And it's not as is. I feel like it's going to be something whack, like in Germany or something. I don't know.
The Germans are like, what the fuck, bro? What do you mean whack? Germany is pretty whacked.
I don't know.
Shit.
Let's go.
I love Germany.
I don't know.
Come on.
Poland.
Bro.
I don't know.
Poland. No, dude. It's Australia, man. It is Come Australia. On. It's Fuck. Australia, bro. It's not Poland.
I was thrown for a wobbly. I was like, no, maybe it's not. I was like, I thought it's obviously.
Come on, man.
Be
Australia. Out of the US, Australia, Canada, the UK, you went with fucking Poland. Dude, my wife's laughing at you. Like, what the fuck?
I thought it was a trick question.
it's data, bro. How is it a trick? It's not a quiz. Okay. So let me just read off the most new listeners, where all our new listeners are from. And this is very telling because 26% of our total streams come from Australia. But out of our new listeners, the number one country for all our everyone that joined us in 2023 is from the USA. Number two is UK. Number three is Australia. Number four is Canada. And I shit you not, number five is Germany.
Poland didn't even make the list. I'm
furious. No, but how you were like, oh, it's going to be something whack like Germany. They were in the top five. So shout out to everyone from Germany.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, Germany. Yeah.
Love you guys.
Oh, that's cool. Data's cool.
Yeah. One. There's a couple more. I'm nearly done.
Oh, yeah. Sick.
You're like, wrap this up.
No. I want to bring it on.
So out of, here's a really interesting one. I'll just ask you this. We have the top three, but I'll be happy if you get number one. What is the top music genre that our podcast listeners listen to. So the top music genre.
I'm just going
to people guess, that listen to us.
Yeah, I'm just going to guess based on the fact that jiu-jitsu seems to, for some reason, relate so heavily to hip-hop. I'm going to guess hip-hop.
Bing, bing, bing. Got it. Rap. Yeah, yeah. Number one is rap. And I found that interesting. Yeah, well, hip-hop, rap, yeah. Hip-hop is like a more of a catch-all where rap is a specific type of hip-hop, I believe. But maybe I'm making shit up. Rap is number one. Number two is rock. And number three is pop. So that was that, I found that interesting. Okay, here's one for you. What's our most shared episode?
The John Danaher one.
The John Danaher one has to be. It has to be. Okay. All right. So if you've seen the Spotify Wrapped, normally it shows you the top five, your top five podcasts that you listen to. And you know, you can share that shit to your Instagram. I think some people have shared us in it, hopefully. But your, yeah, so to be in the top five of a listener's Wrapped is a big deal for a podcast because, you know, a lot of people do share their Wrapped to their Instagram and it's really, really beneficial for us, which is why I mentioned like I enjoy Wrapped for that reason. But here's the one for you. How many people were we in their top 10 podcasts on Spotify?
Fuck. I got no idea. 200.
See, it's funny because you don't see our numbers, but I see our numbers every like every single week. 2,000.
Yeah, holy shit. I was actually going to guess a little bit higher, but I didn't want to make ourselves seem really bad.
10,000. What's Joe Rogan got? So we got at least half of that. So yeah. 250,000.
2,000. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That's and how sick. Many? How many were in the top five?
200.
1,000.
Holy shit.
And how many were we? How many were we number one?
That's not going to be 200. I'm guessing. If it's 200, I'm going to be furious. 500.
200.
Fuck.
Oh, that's so awesome, though. Number one. Number one. Well, I reckon at least 199 because I'm definitely one of those. I'm actually not.
Yeah.
I'm actually not. Our podcast was like number five for me because I normally listen back to it on YouTube and shit and like the recording. I don't listen back to it on Spotify.
That's sick. Yeah, I was unaware that Spotify Wrapped got hate. Like, well, I didn't see the problem with it.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone like, you know, people are like, oh, no one gives a fuck about your Spotify Wrapped. And there's heaps of meme videos every single year when Spotify Wrapped releases. Everyone's like, shut up about your Spotify Wrapped. No one gives a fuck. I give a fuck. So shut up. Yeah, I like it. I think it's cool. I enjoy
understand.
It.
I don't understand the problem. It's like.
People just hate it, bro.
Well, I mean, but especially because as someone who tries not to use a lot of social media, I essentially like don't follow/interact with anyone in social media that I essentially don't know in real life, you know? So like you said, the way you get ideas for new music or whatever. So let's say my brother, for example, who's a musician, if he shared his Spotify Wrapped, I might be like, hey, if my brother likes that band, maybe they're cool. I've never heard of them. I'll check them out, you know, or whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't understand why people hate on Spotify Wrapped. Shut up. Yeah. Spotify Wrapped is cool.
Yeah. I love getting inspiration. Like someone who has really good music recommendations is Olek. He's a blue belt that trains at our gym. He's really good music taste and really into music. So
have you ever let Olek choose the music at the gym?
Well, I haven't let anyone do anything at the gym. So I want to say no to that.
I let him choose the music once. And
was it metal?
It was pretty next level metal, which is fine. Like I don't have necessarily an issue with that genre of music, but there's a time and a place for it. And I didn't feel like the jiu-jitsu class was the time and place for it.
I like it. He's given me some like hectic suggestions. You know, I'm pretty sure he's the one that told me about one of my favorite bands that I currently listen to. I'm pretty sure he told me about them. He did. He told me about two of my like top 10 favorite bands right now. So shout out to Olek and your music taste. I'm all for it. But I do have one more stat that I want to share with you.
You better be good.
Here's the most, probably the most staggering out of all the stats that we've shared so far is how many minutes of podcasts have we created in 2023, this year?
Eighty-three hours. Yeah, I mean, don't make me make the minutes. Like, no, but I can do 83.
Well, okay, I'll give you. I have the hours as well, but it's not 83. It's not 83. Remember, we did take a big break, and we reduced our podcast to one a week. So 83. You can't make me disappointed now.
No. Wait, hang on. No, let me redo the. Yeah, sorry. Let me redo the math. I don't know why I just
instead shot of me in the foot.
No, just because in my head I was like, I just like the way I connected the dots was made no sense. Like instead of going, okay, there's 52 weeks in a year, I just my brain just instantly went to like, okay, what's like a whole number? I just instantly went. 100. Eight. Okay, we didn't do 100 episodes in the year, so maybe we did 82 or whatever. So hang on. Maybe
I want you to calculate it, but
so maybe 37 hours. So 37 times 60, whatever that is for minutes.
Bro, 36.7.
Oh, come on, I get that one, bro. That's
you definitely get that one. 36.7 rounded up to 37 hours.
So what is it?
2,200 minutes. 2,200 minutes of podcasting. So you put on the Beyond Jiu-Jitsu, just the episodes released in 2023. If you put on our 2023 season of podcasting, you would need to listen to us for 36 fucking hours.
Which is essentially not too different to having a full-time job where you're miserable and underpaid. So listen to it all. Listen to the whole 36 hours.
Mate. But,
look at us go, bro. Look at us go. We've only got a couple of weeks left in the year. I think we'll have what are we? By the time this comes out, it's mid-December. So, yeah, a couple
we
more weeks.
We need to go back really quickly.
2024, boys.
Where is it? There is an episode where we talk about our goals, right?
We did one. We did our goals.
Okay, we've done one for 20. What episode was that? We need to figure out which episode it was released in. Because I have a December episode, which was our positional series. Because I don't know if we did one. Maybe we did one earlier. But we need to figure out because remember.
Well, we did on the 6th of January, we did episode 124, Talking 2023 Strategies.
Ah, that's where it is. So you and I need to review that and we need to do another one. Because if you recall, we did a 2022 goals episode way back in 2019 or at the start of 2022. And that's why we did this one this year. So we've fucking released podcasts. Since 2021, bro. We've been releasing podcasts since August of 2021. Yeah, how crazy is that? and we're still fucking losers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh shit. Well,
we even stole someone else's podcast name and we're still here.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. And used John Danaher's to get fucking views.
Yeah. Yeah, on that note, thank you for listening to the John Danaher Beyond Jiu-Jitsu podcast. John Danaher, John Danaher, John Danaher. thank you so much, guys. Thank you for contributing to all those statistics. Like, that is really awesome. As Kieran said, I don't see the numbers, so it's first time me hearing that. Mm. The 73% of new listeners, if you're still here on this episode, awesome. You OG listeners, don't worry, you're still cool. You can stay. We love you. But yes, guys, thank you. Thank you very, very much. And we'll definitely have another episode out for you before the New Year's. So don't stress and we will see you then.